Fáilte, my name is Andrew Healy, and I'm a lover and drinker of Irish whiskey. I'm on a journey of discovery to learn as much as I can about the great spirit of the Emerald Isle. Along that journey, I'm lucky enough to meet other people who are passionate about Irish whiskey, and the My Favourite Irish podcast is their story and their favourite Irish whiskey. Whether that's their current favourite, their first ever dram, or one that has a special place in their life. On this episode of My Favourite Irish, I got to spend some time back in May with James Doherty, owner, and Graham Bell, distiller, at the Ardra Distillery in Donegal, which is home to Slieve Liaigh Distillers. Hands up, it was my first time visiting Donegal, and I suspect I'm not the only Irish person who's guilty of that. I got there at the end of a wonderful six-day road trip that took me through Galway, Mayo, Sligo, and then into Donegal. And everywhere I went on the road trip, the welcome was worthy of the Cead Míle Fáilte, or 100,000 welcomes that we're famous for. Nowhere more so than at the Ardra Distillery, where James and Graham were incredibly generous with their time, as we talked about lots of things. The background to Slieve Liaigh, the Ardra Distillery, and their silky whiskey label. How two Englishmen ended up in this beautiful part of Ireland, sometimes referred to as the Forgotten County, due to its remoteness. We touched on Donegal's distilling past and James's ancestry, which included some illicit spirit making. We talked about grains in whiskey making, as Slieve Liaigh is currently the only distillery on the island that uses this approach. And we talked about the future and what whiskies we can expect to see from Slieve Liaigh in the coming years as their own distilled stocks slowly come to age. And we did all of this talking while sipping on the Irish whiskey that brought me there. The legendary silky whiskey that's responsible for my interest in the peated styles of Irish whiskey. Listen along. Fáilte Arash to My Favourite Irish. I'm often in a bar, but today I'm in a distillery in County Donegal, and I'm joined by James Doherty and Graham Bell. So, gents, lovely to be in your company. Thank you for hosting me here in beautiful Donegal.
You're very welcome.
Great to be here. Obviously, people will hear this as we go through the next 20 minutes, half an hour chatting. I'm an Irishman in Donegal. I'm in the company of two Englishmen in Donegal. Yeah. We'll get into your journeys.
Yeah. One of us thinks he's Irish.
So, I suppose the first thing to get out of the way is the pronunciation of where we are. So I'm going to leave that to the two of you. Where we are
we're in the Ardra Distillery. So there's a sort of half an A in the middle of it. I think most people would say Ardara, but it's Ardra. It's in Irish, I think Arden Raha. That's sort of it's not a fort, but it's the where a village would have been centered. It's the sort of... So we'll call it a fort for the sake of it, but it's the fort on the hill, or on the height. So then it's just literally across the way from us here. So Ardra Distillery, and it's the home of the Slieve Liaigh Distillers. So Slieve, spelled S-L-I-A-B-H, is mountain, and Liaigh is flagstone, so near the mountain of flagstones.
And obviously Slieve Liaigh is close enough to here. It's a beautiful part of Donegal.
It's a stunning part of Donegal, some of the highest cliffs in Europe. It's about 20 kilometres, I guess, now. But we actually have a site on the back of the mountain. So who knows, we might build a second distillery actually on the Slieve Liaigh.
If the county council will give you planning permission.
We have planning permission. It's having put all the money into Ardra, it's probably more a challenge of raising another 10, 15 million to do it.
Okay.
Let's get this one finished, get it working properly. And then if we've got the passion and the energy, we can come back and build on that 20-acre site.
Well, that's for the future.
Yep.
For now, we're going to talk a little bit about the past and each of your backgrounds. So like so many people in the Renaissance of Irish whiskey, everyone has a great backstory and a colourful background. So I suppose, James, we'll start with you, and then we'll throw it over to Graham, because each of you have got some colourful stories to tell.
Yeah, well, there we go. So James Doherty, my parents are from here, so they're from Southwest Donegal. My mum's was born in Kilcar, my dad was born in England, but his parents are from Carrick, the next village where I actually live now. I suppose my mum left here in the 60s really looking for work in England, and that's you know, looking for opportunity, and this is an area that is kind of structurally disadvantaged. So we talk about kind of reclaiming the distilling heritage of Donegal to create opportunity so that people like my mum don't have to leave.
Yeah.
And it's kind of doing that, so that's pretty good. So I born, grew up in England, went to a school that was predominantly Irish-Italian.
Okay.
So when we played football in the playground, it was Ireland versus Italy. No need to guess who won. And the English kids trying to work out who they wanted to play for. So I kind of think of myself as being Irish, but went to Africa with a wanderlust, did a degree in agriculture, went back out to Malawi, grew tea and coffee for a living, ran tea estates, tea factories, coffee estates, coffee factories.
Okay.
Came back to in the late 90s, fell into William Grant & Sons, and I mean almost literally fell into a sales role in Central and Eastern Europe just at about the time Yugoslavia was pulling itself apart. And got a few kind of lucky breaks business-wise. So, you know, other people's distributors got fired, and then those big distributors came after us. And the Grants business was kind of attractive at that time, so the business grew. I mean, for example, Russia went from 2,000 9-litre cases to 200,000 9-litre cases in a year.
Wow.
And you only have to do that once or twice in your career for everyone to think
you're a genius.
Yeah, yeah, as opposed to lucky. And I'm quite clear I was lucky. So I did that, ended up on the board for about 5 years, was there on the board when we bought Tullamore Dew. Got my taste for Irish there. Did a spell in sort of innovation where I had a passion for kind of the technical side of it as a distiller, not as a distiller, but I was a kind of an engineer who was in marketing and sales.
Okay.
And left Grants, joined Foster's Beer, went off to Australia for a little while. Then got taken over by Saab Miller, moved us to Hong Kong, opening up Peroni around Asia, not the toughest job in the world, if I'm honest. And but we maxed our bonuses out, really. We'd already decided we were going to come back and do this, you know, build a distillery. So we maxed the bonuses out. That paid for the gin still, which you've seen under the floor.
Yep.
And yeah, it was Christmas 2014. So we've been at this 2015. We've kind of put the business together, dropped the kids out of international schools in Hong Kong into full immersion Irish,
okay,
which they may never forgive me for. And now the business, yeah, is in pretty good shape. We're in about 40 countries.
Okay, we'll talk more about a couple of those things as we move on. But Graham, obviously an accent from the northeast in England. So where's home originally?
Originally from Newcastle. That's Newcastle over in the UK. So I lived there till I was 18 and then went off to university in Scotland.
Okay.
And I studied there for 4 years, and then I joined Coca-Cola and Cadbury's and moved around the UK, 5 or 6 different places. And then we decided to move over to Canada.
Okay.
So that was around 2000. Moved over to just outside of Toronto and lived there for around 20 years. Again, similar kind of worked for candy companies, Ferrero Rocher, chocolate companies.
In production?
Yep, mainly production, plant management, project management kind of jobs. And then I got the chance to work with Diageo in Montreal, at the distillery there. And that went well, and they said, do you want to come down and help start up the Bulleit distillery in Kentucky?
Okay.
So that was great to be able to go down. I found Louisville is a great place to live. We started the distillery there, and then I applied for a job back in Scotland. So I went to Dufton.
Okay.
Worked at Dufton Distillery, Craigamore Distillery, and Linkwood Distillery for a short while. Decided to go back to Canada. Not sure why that was a good decision at the time, but I did. And then I always wanted to come back and work in whiskey again.
Okay.
And this job came up. It's Sleeve League starting a distillery up, so it came up on the internet. I think it was during COVID. It was towards the end of COVID. Something like that. So I applied for the job. We kind of had the interview, a couple of interviews over the internet. I can remember sitting in my house. And I'd only been to Ireland once before for a wedding.
Okay.
Before coming over.
And you wanted to come back?
Well, originally, my goals was to work in a whiskey distillery and live by the sea.
Okay.
And I always thought I'd end up going to Scotland. I didn't know a great deal about Irish whiskey industry at the time, and how it was growing on that. And then sort of James said, well, we'd would like to give you the job, James and Moira. How quickly can you come over?
Because we're in commissioning.
Okay. And so you want the job. So I said, well, I can come over in a few weeks, but obviously I need to go back to sell my house and pack and everything. So I came over literally on the Sunday with two suitcases. Started work on the Tuesday, sorted some accommodation out for me here.
Okay.
And so I walked in here on the Tuesday, and the commissioning engineers were saying, okay, we finished our work.
Here's the keys.
Yeah.
Here's the keys, we're ready to start.
So you were in the deep end.
Yeah, completely in the deep end. So it was just really just me. And so for those first 3-4 weeks, it was sort of 7 days a week, 12-hour days, starting it, labeling the pipes so I could remember.
Of course, sort of
which valves to open and things like this. And really from there.
And we'll talk about more of what you've done and what you're doing. But interesting, just to go off on a quick tangent, obviously you hadn't met.
Graham came over, we were travelling.
Yeah, you were away.
So his first day at work, we weren't here.
You weren't even here to welcome.
No, and so you had to walk into a distillery, which I designed on the back of a fag packet. And
you're right. I'm actually thinking about it. I should have checked that there was actually a distillery here rather than just a... a picture.
Yeah.
So,
how hard can it be?
Well,
the answer is very hard.
Yeah, the two of you know that more than I do. So, so with that, we're going to jump into kind of the business, but I think we should probably put a little bit of your fine whiskey in a glass, and we'll kind of toast to it. So
we'll put your one out here first because I know you like this one.
Yeah, well,
with Legendary Silky.
This is what brought me here, so I suppose we should have a little tip of the glass to that, and we could talk about the whiskey and styles as we go through it. So. We should say Sláinte. We're here in
Sláinte. Thanks. Yeah. Good to have you here, man.
Yeah.
Take
and
care.
There we go. So, this is, as we'll talk about in a bit, something that I've enjoyed on my journey. So the business, obviously, when Graham came on board, the distillery was, you'd got your planning permission, you'd built this wonderful building, and you were starting to put things together.
Yeah, we've done a sort of unusual model in that we've done a bit, raised a bit, done a bit, raised a bit. In terms of financing, which has meant that we've kind of ended up, so Moira and myself and James Keith, who kind of originally founded the business, James being a family friend who's really good at sort of early stage companies and construction, particularly, and then we brought on a couple of non-execs who are ex-main board of Sad Miller.
Okay.
So between us, we've kind of fundraised the whole piece. We've raised, today we've raised about 11 million euros to get to where we've got to. Always felt we could build a distillery for less than that. COVID got in the way, a few wars got in the way, kind of make everything expensive. So, but also I think that the you start off in this thing with a kind of slightly deluded optimism, which you probably wouldn't start without, actually, but you know, thinking that look, a distillery really costs you 15 million to build, and we thought we could do it for 10. You know, and the reality is it's probably going to cost us 15, and we lost a couple of years to a bit of sort of political shenanigans on another site, which we just touched on before.
Okay.
But yeah, we've raised 11 million. We've got a footprint that's got us out to about 40 countries. My background is distribution and brands, really, and that's so we've kind of pushed hard on that bit. And we built the gin distillery first in Carrick, where the bottling line is now. That got us started, raised some money on the back of proving that concept, proving that sort of Donegal Island and Donegal as a discrete and distinctive place within Ireland was a platform that we could build a business on. So building a business that's based on highly distinctive spirits as opposed to kind of mainstream Irish. And then as that's gone, we've kind of raised money periodically to do that. So 2020, we were the first Irish distillery to go crowdfunding.
Okay.
It was the third biggest raise in Europe that year for food and drink. We raised 3.9 million, which was a pretty amazing success. And that built, that funded the build of this.
Okay.
So, we've got ultimately now there's a 500,000 litre pure alcohol, so 3,500 barrels a year distillery, about the size of Dingle, not Dingle, it's about double the size of Dingle, about the size of Teeling in Dublin.
Okay.
So 2-ton mash,
So in terms of kind of the, we talked before we started recording about football and each of our loves for teams and what they're doing. But so in terms of the leagues, you know, Premier Division, would you, you'd be, you know, well, in terms of where you'd rank yourself?
I don't know. Well, gosh, yeah, if you look at the Premier League, it's hard to say. I mean, you've obviously got the sort of Jamesons, Bushmills, Tullamore Dews, which are the big four, I guess.
Yeah.
We would be the sort of in that next tick, next group after that.
So you're fighting for the qualifier places.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, but we have built in scalability, so we should be able to build it. I mean, if I'm hopeful, I'd say we were Arsenal when they were at Highbury, and we've got the ability to make it bigger and go further.
Okay.
But that may be a bit stretching it a little bit. But I think, you know, the reality is we're conscious that sort of a distillery size is probably 1 million litres is the right size, 1.2, something like that. Size of Ardbeg, maybe.
Yeah.
That's, I think, the most sustainable size from a cost and everything perspective. And this building and the way we run it could probably stretch to that.
Okay. So, Graham, obviously, you're a distiller.
Yeah.
And you came in when the Ardra Distillery was commissioned.
Yeah.
Previous to that, though, you had been you'd been building your reputation and I'm talking about whiskey here.
Yeah.
With the Silky range.
Yes.
And you're very upfront and transparent about the fact that the whiskey for this is sourced and but you blend it. This is your blend.
Yeah. So we create the blend. I mean, we're very lucky that we sourced from a number of places. So we've had Cooley liquids in the past, but actually they're harder to come by. Great Northern for us are the best partner in terms of consistency of supply and breadth of flavour that we can play with. And we were very fortunate that John Teeling obviously is a bit of a legend in the industry, but Brian Watts, who was his distiller, who sadly passed away, Brian died 18 months ago now, maybe a year ago. Trying to think anyway, but Brian was ex-William Grant's.
Okay.
So Brian and I knew each other from Girvan, so he was very generous with me about letting me loose in the lab on my own. I'd learned from David Stewart at Balvenie how to put whiskies together. Not to his standard, I don't think, but we're learning and we're doing the best we can. And we had this very specific idea around this journey in smoke and how we could build that out and take people from a hint of smoke to something much more challenging that paves the way for the whiskies that will come from Ardra ultimately. And I think you're right, being open and honest about where the whiskies come from has kind of helped build reputation. And I think the whiskies drink well. I mean, they drink well and they're different.
And we'll jump into them in a couple of minutes. So Graham, you're a distiller, but you're involved in blending as well?
I came on board when we started developing the Midnight.
Okay.
So that was really good. I think it was only my second or third week.
Yes.
We went up there with James and Moira, with Brian in the lab. And he'd done a bit of work on the Midnight, but we did a bit of tweaking up there.
And we kind of, so with when Graham came on board in the Midnight, we were looking to, they're different ideas in smoke and smoke as a flavour. And we were looking to see how we could surprise you by increasing the smoky level to 35% of the blend from 15%, but doing it with a single malt that would take you takes us in a different way, in a different direction, but it also would probably take people in a different direction from a taste perspective. And it's super elegant, so I think it probably shows that between Moira and myself, Graham and Brian to a degree, we're a good team in terms of.
I find it quite different from these where the smoke's a bit more prominent. This one's, there's probably a lot more going on in the Midnight, mm-hmm. a bit more complex.
Yeah, so on that, and I've been open and honest with you about how my journey in Irish whiskey, I was always, I won't say fearful, but I was reticent to jump into a peated style. And again, I really enjoy the legendary Silky. It's something we drink at home. So for people who were like me or are like me, what's the elevator pitch for your style in terms of, you know, what does it offer people?
Yeah, I think first of all, it's talking about the Donegal, the distilling heritage, the area. What I find, it's a unique part of Ireland that even a lot of people in the rest of Ireland aren't really that familiar with. So it's great to talk about that. And then when you talk about the smoke and the whiskies, but I find often you go to a lot of these shows and people say, oh no, I don't like peated whiskey. So you start them on the legendary, you say, but just give it a try. And I'd have to say 90% of the people are converted. They say, oh, actually, I quite like that. It doesn't, compared to the Islay's where you get that medicinal thing, might hit you in the face. This is, you've got this softness and the smoke there. Quite a few people can gravitate up towards the dark sulky.
Yeah, and for me, I describe this, the legendary as having a kiss of smoke.
Yeah.
Obviously, I host tastings and it's a lovely line and people can relate to it. And we tasted the whiskies before we started recording. And James, you encouraged me to go back to the start when we had finished.
Yeah.
And it was really interesting to see how the legendary had evolved. I kind of described it as a creamy nuttiness, and which I found very appealing. So I think part of it is being open to these styles of whiskies.
And I think I think that's right. And I think most people in the whiskey world are looking to explore, and certainly for us, it's about tapping into that kind of people's desire to explore, to discover, and discover taste. So we don't talk about peating generally. I mean, you obviously know about it, so it's easy for us to talk about it as a good shorthand. But we talk about smoke as a flavour rather than peating as an input to the process, and that. I think the softness that we try and blend in, and certainly the softness that Graham distills into the whiskies here from Ardra, is uncommon. I don't think that's common. I think softness is not particularly a trait that people distill or blend for, but we believe it allows us to carry richer flavours and higher alcohol. So if we want to play at high alcohols, we can. So our cask strengths always sell out when we do them. But we do look on this as a journey in smoke, and there's a few other kind of practical pieces, which is if we want to take people on a journey, most people take you on a journey through age.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really valid way of doing whiskey. Everyone knows the shorthand, everybody can understand how to navigate it. The problem you've got in Irish is that the supply of older whiskies is so limited.
And diminishing.
That there's not a sustainable business model in there. And so we approached it with this idea of smoke, different ideas in smoke. And so instead of a range that's laddered up like brothers, they are cousins because they're exploring different ideas. So they look, like cousins, they kind of look familiar with it, but they're all quite distinct in their own right.
And you've made it easy for people to see which is which on the shelf with the colour gradation in the labels. You go from a light blue to a dark blue into black. So that could, the visual element that would lead people to the lighter coloured label is the lighter smoke.
It is. It's actually, and that's the colour of the sea when you look down from the cliffs of Schlievely, you get this, so into the sea. That's what.
I didn't know you could find the Pantone or the exact colour for your label on the sea. Well, that's impressive.
Maybe inspired by rather than the exact Pantone. The sea doesn't have a Pantone reference on it, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, and colour is an easy way for people to navigate the range. So
So that's the current range, which is doing very well for you. I believe you mentioned 40 markets, 40 countries.
Yeah, so we're in 40 countries actively selling at the moment. I mean, it's driven by six, really. You know, so if you think about sort of USA, Canada, Ireland, UK, Poland, and Australia are the kind of real focus markets for us. But we are available in 40 countries. And 45 states of America. I think we've got agreements in 50 states of America. I think we're missing South Dakota. But everywhere
No disrespect to the folks in South Dakota. You'll do okay without them.
But Butte, Montana has the biggest Donegal population outside of Donegal.
Right.
So we have, you know, a good, really good coverage in America across the country, which is really good, all 10 provinces of Canada. The distribution platform is good, it's got there, it's kind of getting there, and we're starting to see it really pull through, which is really encouraging.
I know David over there
works
his backside off in the market.
David Woods. If you don't befriend him on LinkedIn, because he'll torture you. He'll be tortured with photos of him in bottles.
So that's what it takes in America, obviously, you know, doing work with the distributors in them, it's a
It's no substitute for shoe leather and time.
Pounding the pavements and building relationships. Absolutely. It's so that's the current range, and obviously what you've done, you've got strong distribution. But there's kind of chapter two that's going to follow that with what Graham is and has been distilling here. So you want to talk about that? Like, what's coming down the proverbial pipeline style-wise?
Right, so we're going to make two styles of whiskey here. One's going to be the 100% peated malt, triple distilled. The second one is pot still, which again, that's single malt, barley, and up to 20% oats.
Okay.
But everything's peated.
So we're going to have a peated single pot still?
Yeah.
Okay.
And we dedicate, we've made a very specific call, which is not to make a patchwork of styles, to nail down two or three things and try and make them well and make them in a sort of big enough scale that you can build. You know, with 40 countries, you need to make enough of it to sell.
You got
to
fill the pipeline.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
that's what's coming out of here. And just so folks are worried that the current range is going away, the Silky will stay. It'll continue to be a sourced whiskey.
Absolutely. And Silky is the engine of the business. And we only make, if you think about the blends, we only personally make a peated element. So we'll constantly have to source the unpeated elements and the grain whiskies.
Okay.
And that's kind of baked into the business model. So we're not making Silky until something happens. We're not doing it while we wait. As you well know, there's very little waiting going on. There's a lot of work going on. It's not like you're waiting for things. And if we can, the more successful Silky is, probably the more we can hold back on releasing our Ardra too early.
So more time in barrel.
Better whiskies overall.
Okay.
More time to play and experiment with the kind of
different
recipes and stuff.
Okay. You touched on cask there, Graham. I'm going to guess kind of the classic bourbon aged.
At the moment we've got first fill bourbon and sherry casks up there.
Okay.
It's a 70-30 mix, really. For American bourbon, 70% or 65% probably, 30% first fill Oloroso sherries, and then there's 5% red wines, ports, muscatels, other things that are
fun barrels.
Things when you finally put the blend together, you'll need for colour and taste.
I think that's what I'd like to start doing now is getting some of those different casks in and putting them in. The malt in there and just seeing how it's maturing over the next couple of years in that.
Yeah, that must be interesting for you to, you want to do an experiment of some sort, but it's a number of years before you see the result of that. It's not like you put it in a barrel and take it out next week and see what it does.
We're also probably too big to play, you know, so if you think about I kind of look at some of the boutique distilleries, there's Balliol up in the north, or Tipperary or Blackwater or Killowen, and you look at these guys and they have such a freedom to make whatever they want, whenever they want. And maybe it takes them a week to fill a barrel, whereas a single batch for us, we fill seven barrels for a single batch. We don't have that freedom to just go and make other things.
Okay.
Really, we have to make what we do consistently. And we've kind of tried to build a recipe of casks that we think will be broadly consistent from the beginning. So we're not going to release different batches and different styles. It's from the get-go, there will be a style that will come with us on the journey as it gets older. And there'll come a point, probably, which we'll all decide together, that, you know, maybe 8 years is its signature age, or maybe it's 10, or maybe it's 12, I don't know, but we'll work that out.
And I'm going to assume when you get there, you will also still hold some inventory back because you'll want some aged to be blending
it
in the future.
Potentially we could put it in the Silky too.
So you've got a kind of a nice canvas on which to play. You've got obviously you've got recipes for what you have, but you've got the ability to be flexible as you move forward and bring other items into play.
I hope so. I think it's kind of challenging because you're making intuitive position, you're taking intuitive positions because we're not consumer researched out, you know, like a big guy would be. So we've made the decision on things that we like, whether it's a taste that Graham wants or a taste that I want, and I know Graham wants to experiment with rye. I don't have a particular passion for rye, but we'll probably look at that. Once we get enough stock laid down, we can have a look at that. We've got super flexible kit because, as you've seen, it's effectively an illegal distiller's process modernized. If my grandfather turned up today, he should be able to recognize the process. He might not recognize the scale. But that flexibility should give Graham the luxury of kind of playing with rye, wheat, whatever you want to later on.
So on you touched on process there, and when I was taken around earlier, and not that it's relevant to the recording, but this is my 12th distillery visit in two weeks here on the island, and I have to say it's been a wonderful journey. But you are the first distillery that I've come to where your early part of the process, so you're leaving the grain in, is that what you call it, a grain in?
It's grains in all the way through, so it's very unique.
Yeah.
In fact, we start off that we have a hammer mill, so we'll bring the malted barley in, 50 parts per million, and we'll actually grind it to a fine flour, which is very different from what you would do in Scotland or the rest of Ireland, where they would make a grist, which would be a bit more coarser. So we've got a very fine powder, and then we don't have a louder ton. We have a mash cooker, so we'll add that grain into the hot water there and do all the conversion there for 60 minutes or so. Then that grain goes all the way through to the fermenters,
all still together.
Goes all the way through.
Yeah, so normally at the end of the cooker, you'd either go to a mash filter or you'd have a mash tun, in which case it would have stayed behind. Mm-hmm. And so that would then go off to cattle or whatever.
Yeah.
But for us, it stays.
So it's very different. So if you look inside our washbacks there, you would see a very dark, almost like a wheat porridge.
Okay.
Traditionally, there'd be a clear wort there.
Okay, yeah.
So that makes us, that part of the process is very unique. And then again, we'll send everything from the fermenter, the wash back, straight into the wash still.
Into the first still then?
Yeah,
okay.
The wash still. And again, we have an external reboiler where we heat it up through there.
So, as I said, that's the first time I've come across this.
Yeah.
The thinking behind it, is it flavour?
It is. It's... I was convinced that if you've gone to all the trouble of putting this peat smoke onto the husks, I mean, I know it goes into the grain itself, but it's on the husks in as well, and then you filter all of the husks off at the beginning, you've lost all that character in the very first stage. And I was convinced that if you put it in and kept all of those other flavours in, that you would get a richer, more characterful whiskey at the end of it. The other thing was, there's a sort of a nod to history. If you think about Donegal, has almost no... The last distillery was here in 1841. It was small. It didn't survive because, one, dairy was too big. The dairy distilleries were too big, but also the local illicit business was too good. So what we've tried to do is kind of honour that historic illicit history of Donegal, by taking a process that, you know, the stories I was told of my grandfather was that he never filtered anything.
Okay.
So, you know, they mashed it up. Now, he wouldn't have made it into a flour. We have to make it into a flour because our kit is designed, modern equipment doesn't like big bits. Yeah. So that's a technical term. So we turn it into little bits and pump it through. So it was to try and honour the way the guys would have done it on the hills with no filters.
Okay.
And... The picture in my head, rightly or wrongly, was if Granddad walked back into the world today, it'd be impressive because he's been dead since 78. But if he walked into the place, he would recognise the process.
Okay.
But he wouldn't recognise the scale. Okay.
So two things on that. I'm guessing then the cleaning of that still is a little bit more laborious.
With the cleaning of everything's difficult. And really, right at the beginning when we were commissioning. We didn't have a hammer mill, we had a roller mill.
Okay.
Some of the heat exchangers. So we got a lot of blockages during the commissioning on that, and we had to bypass some of the heat exchangers, empty tanks on the floor, etc.
James has got his head in his hands here, so he remembers those days.
Well, as does Graham. I mean, and the other thing was that I kind of designed the stuff with, because Graham, and unfortunately for me and for Graham, you know, when we drew up the distillery, there were the biggest challenge with all of this business really is the stuff you don't know that you don't know. And you know, to Donald Rumsfeld stuff, you go into these things and you think, oh, I know how to do this. I know how to make whiskey. You know, how hard can it be? And then the answer is, well, actually, I didn't know that, and now I do, and now we've got to solve for it.
Yeah.
And there are things that the aesthetic of it, you know, so the aesthetic of everything is really important to me, as well as, so it's not just the form, it's the function, it's the function and the aesthetic. It's got to be right altogether. And Graham walked in and went, well, how are you going to clean that? And I'm like, what do you mean, how are we going to clean it? Look at the way those pipes are laid out. That's just beautiful. And he was like, yeah, but that's a dead leg and I can't clean it.
The practical.
Yeah, I'm very practical.
So we had to cut the pipes and move them. And
yes, and we ended up actually changing the roller mill to a hammer mill to get the fine powder. Then we had to change a lot of the non-return valves, or in fact, all of the non-return valves.
Twice,
because we couldn't get the wart through. A lot of it kept blocking up on that. And then, and even things, just disposing of like the pot ale and the draft, compared to the traditional approach, we don't have draft, etc. So getting rid of the waste, you know.
It's a different kind of waste.
It is, it's a different waste. But we don't have a lot of cattle around here to take it to. So there's all those things, sort of making the whiskey, once that's established, is relatively straightforward once it's established. It's all the ancillary functions.
Yeah, yeah. And you talked about flavour through that process.
Yeah.
And you took a new make sample, I believe, last week, and you poured some for me before we started. So this was this a malt or a pot still?
It's a malt. It's a triple distilled malt.
Yeah, so... And I tasted it, and it's weighing in the high 60s, I believe, Graham.
Yeah, 70s. I think that's 70.
In the 70s. So, so obviously serious on the ABB front.
78. Yeah.
But I was struck by the balance in the mouth when I tasted it, and I would say I'm getting better at tasting whiskey, but tasting new make is something I've done more, I think, in the last 2 weeks than I've done. Obviously, there's no Irish whiskey distilleries in Northern California, so people are pouring this. It's going back to that part of the process where you talk about grain in and the flavour. There is a lovely richness in new make.
I'm convinced now that we've done it, and we've worn all of the, you know, we wear the scars. So no one else will have to wear them, which is really good. But I'm convinced you'll see more grains in distilleries now. You know, I think we've kind of proven the concept, and we've proven that it creates flavors, you know, really interesting flavors, to the point where some of the kind of smaller bonders, you know, the guys at Two Stacks, we've made. You made whiskey for them.
For them, yeah.
They found a recipe from 1838 in Donegal, so they wanted us to make that for them, so we've done that.
Great.
They specifically wanted us because it's a grains in distillery and no one else offers that. So it's kind of captured the imagination a little bit, and I think that's really positive. And I've just poured you there a pot still. So that's
weighing in at 78% according to the sticker.
Yes. So that's non-compliant. So that's a recipe from 1910. It's approximately the Powers recipe from that era, and we've peated it all. So it's
I can smell the peat from over here.
But that's what, peated malts.
Yep. Yeah, that one, that mash bill's 50% peated malt, 30% green barley, and 20% peated oats.
Peated oats.
And so, getting peated oats quite unique, because those oats really are peated off the chart. I think up 150 parts per million on that.
The depth of flavour in that.
Yeah, and the softness of that mouthfeel. Yeah, it's incredible, isn't it?
Everyone says creaminess with oats, and it's there.
Yeah.
And I actually think the peat really lifts the oats.
Elevates it, doesn't it? Yeah.
Yeah.
It's wonderful. And the only thing with that kind of level of oats, his cleaning becomes even more
again,
problematic.
Well, part of the problem also is the guys who make that, Irish Craft Maltsters, the peated oats. I think we've only got four customers where one of them. And for the quantity that we need, we could probably take their whole annual production.
Really?
On that. But so those oats are a unique product for us.
Fascinating, fascinating. So not only have you gone outside of the technical file or the GI, you petered it as well.
Yeah, just don't tell the Irish Whiskey Association. Yeah.
Your secret is safe with the world on this. you're both smiling here. You're excited by this. Obviously, the future is bright in terms of what you've been making. They would follow into the other markets slowly but surely.
Yeah, I think we'll start to release probably early 2025.
Okay.
Small quantities, hopefully not for the collector's market, more for the taste explorers. I'm not naive that, you know, you're not going to get collectors coming in, but I'd love people to buy it, open it, taste it, and then keep it so that when we release the next year on and it's the same recipe but just a little bit older, they can compare and contrast.
Yeah.
And come with us and sort of say, yeah, you can see how a year's done, you know, what the year's done to it. I think that for me would be the real plus. Whether we do a release of single malt and pot still every year, or we do them alternate years or something like that, still to be decided.
Okay.
And partly that'll be determined by how Graham thinks it's going in the cask.
How it develops.
Yeah.
We've got some 1 year old up in the warehouse. It's always fun taking people up in the warehouse and
tasting the new make and then tasting.
Yeah, tasting the new make straight from the cask there, the 1 year old. And you know, sort of. For the first time when we developed it and we're standing up at the still tasting it, you sort of develop something that you like. But then it's great to get that feedback.
Yeah.
People, we've had people we've supplied some to the Scottish Malt Whiskey Society for their members throughout the world, their tasting.
Okay.
And so Two Stacks and a few other places. So all the feedback's been very good.
Great.
And it's the fact that we're making something unique.
Yeah. Mm. No, it's wonderful. Wonderful. It's lovely to be here with the two of you and taste it. And
yeah. Well, it's. I mean, you know, Donegal is a place apart. You know, we make highly distinctive things from a county that's, you know, geographically in the north, politically in the Republic, and ignored by everyone. So, you know, we're a contrary bunch. We make contrary whiskies.
Well, it's funny because Donegal was next and the last thing on my list to talk about you with, because. Both hands up. This is my first time in Donegal.
Yep.
And I think, Graham, you touched on this earlier on. I think a lot of Irish people are guilty of not coming to Donegal. I think we've made it logistically challenging to get to Donegal.
Yeah.
I came up the west coast through Galway and nipped over into Mayo and then Sligo and here. And I have to say, I have genuinely been blown away by the West. I don't have any experience with it historically.
Okay.
So Donegal, obviously, you know, James, your family are from here. Is it the hidden gem that we're hoping will be discovered, or do we?
Well, it's a hidden gem for sure. I mean, it's my happy place for sure. You know, that's why we're here. It is a hidden gem, but I also think it's the kind of place that's not for everyone anyway. So, you know, it's maybe a little bit drug-like. So you either love it and you can't get enough and you'll come back and, you know, you'll like the wild, the raw, the untamed, slightly quirky, a little bit Thran-type nature of the place. And you either want that and you get it and you come back for more, or you'll never come again. And I don't mind which you choose, but that's...
Once you come here once.
Yeah, so you should come here, make the effort. Because, I mean, the thing is, I sit in these Fulton Island talks and stuff and people go... Oh, you know, it's the same distance as Dingle. And my response to that is no one cares. No one cares. So don't tell them that. So we try and tell people that, you know, come to Donegal. It's a pilgrimage. It's to Hellangon. Bring your passport. You're going to have to go through the north to get here. You might need some pounds, you know, and kind of make it into an adventure, because then when people come, they'll see this sort of outstanding beauty that's here, the warmth of the welcome, you know, and it's slightly sort of quirky nature. For me, they're all positives. They're all things that we should be leveraging, you know, to the benefit of everyone. And hopefully what we do is open the door to people to come to Donegal for a specific reason. They come and, you know, they come and see the distillery, but they realise there's a hell of a lot more here.
And you said the welcome is warm. I would second that. Mm. My welcome all up the West Coast has been warm. And they obviously are happy with two Englishmen here, so you know everyone's welcome.
Well, they're not going to tell us that.
Yeah.
Well, no, maybe you're more a celebrity here than I am.
Oh,
so.
Really?
Well, Ardra's a great community.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I'm really pleased that the distillery ended up here. It's a beautiful site. The people in the town are very supportive of it. And I even go as far as to say very proud of having the distillery here.
Good, good. And I suppose the distillery grows, it'll be a substantial employer in the area. The business in general, rather than
specifically, because the distilling part of it, you're probably a team of seven or eight is probably as many as you need.
Okay.
The visitor aspect of it at the moment, there's sort of two full-time, one part-time, or two part-time. But that probably that probably doubles over time, maybe even triples, depending on whether we build an additional piece to do the visitor piece, as we're camped in reception here at the moment. So that's all. You know, we'll prove that business case as we go, and as we do, then we'll expand it. And I think it's interesting that we're a catalyst for sort of something different. So instead of talking to hotels about, you know, I want you to list our whiskies in your bar, it's actually, no, you have to have our whiskies in your bar because we're putting people in your beds.
Yes.
You know, so there are people.
The dynamic has shifted.
Yeah, whether you're staying in Wood Hill or Tara or, you know, any of the hotels, Mill House or even Loch Esk or Harvey's, if you're staying in any of these hotels in this area, you know, and you're visiting the distillery, we're now content providers, I think, you know, to use Instagram speak.
You're a big incentive, you're a draw here.
Yeah.
So on that subject, when people come here, obviously there's a couple of other distilleries here in Donegal as well. I'm sure we would all encourage people to go visit all of them.
Yeah.
So I will share details of those in the details below the.
Personally, I think Donegal could take 5 or 6 distilleries. I'd love them all to be peated, just because I'd love us to be the Isla of Ireland. That would be a really good place for us to be. The moment you've got 3, you've got Boileoch up in the north, Michael O'Boyle, doing some very, very cool stuff, particularly around the Poitin areas. You know, he's doing some very, very neat stuff and proper farmhouse distilling. You know, he's kind of, you know, he's got a tiny boutique operation done brilliantly. Then you come down halfway down and you're in sort of Guido proper, really in the heart of the Gaeltacht. And, you know, it's in Crawley next to where, you know, the Clannad family are from. It's only probably a stone's throw from Leo's Tavern, which is an old carpet factory. And it's been turned into, you know, a boutique distillery as well, using old, are they Charentaise or brandy stills? I can never remember. But it looks like Jules Verne meets Willy Wonka in there. And it's super cool, you know. And theirs is much more of a visitor play than ours, which is more of an international whiskey play. But that's, you know, there's lots of ways to the top of this mountain. So, come and see us all.
So I would, obviously, and I think one of the greatest things, I don't know who came up with the idea, but one of the greatest things that I've seen from abroad in tourism terms on the island has been the Wild Atlantic Way.
Yeah.
And you're at the northwestern end of it. Has that helped visitation to this part of the world?
Definitely. I think the Wild Atlantic Way is probably the tourism brand of the last 20 years. I mean, it's incredible. So we're at Sleeve League is signature point 3 on it from the top.
From the top, okay.
And 13 from the bottom. If you start at the bottom, you know, I think joining that up with the Antrim Way and the North Antrim Coast, I think it'd be really important because that's really impressive. But, you know, the Wild Atlantic Way, visiting the breweries, I think it's just not just about distilleries. I think it's breweries. You got cheesemakers, salmon smokers, doing, you know, the whole foodie kind of, the sort of taste exploration down the Wild Atlantic Way is a fantastic thing.
Okay.
And you can do it, I think, in cars, do it in small groups, so you can duck out and, you know, when the moment takes, you go and decide, you know, we even take, Graham, you take the guys down to the oyster farm down there.
Yeah, it's great, sort of with the Andouillement when we get visitors, because the Andouillement's all about the connection with the sea, the use of the seaweed, the gin. So there's a local oyster farm down here.
Fantastic.
Charlie's Oyster Farm. We go down and taste the gin, have a few oysters, and it's a great experience.
Yeah. So I think that whole food offering along the west coast is immeasurably better than it used to be, and it's come a long way from the sort of boiled bacon and mashed potatoes. It's the food scene is proper taste orientated, using fresh produce, and doing exciting, interesting things. So, so the Wild Atlantic Way has been a massive, massive boost for us.
That what you just said about food, that could probably be a
podcast on its own.
On its own.
Yes. Yeah.
And you know, the three of us have all lived in other cultures and countries, and I think a lot of people bring that back, and they have looked to see what we do well on the island, and they want to elevate that. So.
Yeah. I think the bigger challenge probably for us is just the seasonal nature of things.
Okay.
You know, that's hopefully because we're not weather dependent. If you think about if you're weavers and distillers and things like that, they're not weather dependent. They're indoor activities. That maybe extends the tourism offering in Donegal, because if it's about the beauty of the wild outdoors, you are weather dependent.
Yeah.
And surfers are probably a resilient bunch,
yeah.
but there's plenty that aren't.
Yeah, and there's a reason why the island is so green, and to do what falls from the sky. So
that's it.
Yeah.
Well, today's rain is tomorrow's whiskey, I guess.
Yeah,
so.
You should share that with the marketing team. So one last question before we go. Your favourite local pub here in the area? Where would, if they're visiting, where should people go for a pint and a dram?
Right. Well, there's quite a few. I go to different ones for different reasons. You know, Nancy's. It's about 8th generation.
Okay.
Great food there. The Corner House, you've got the music.
Okay.
On there. The Tavern, it's over towards Port New. Great friendly locals there. It's hard to pass that on the way home.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, well, on your way home. And we live the other side of the mountain, so because you've already done the ones here, I'll probably go the other way and say, you know, our way, John Joe's in Kilcar has always got great crack, and John Joe himself is a great personality. Evelyn's in Carrick has been a massive supporter from us from the get-go. And if you're on the way to Schlieve League, the Rusty Mackerel is... The Rusty Mackerel, great Guinness, really good food. So they've just... it's become a kind of foodie pub, and you can actually look up at the mountain and you're by the sea at the same time. So there's not much to dislike about it.
Ticks all the boxes.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming the pubs have bounced back post-COVID and they're doing well, and I'm hoping they are.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's a... The sort of day trade, I think, is probably down still a little bit.
Yeah.
But actually, they've all kind of had to get more internationally focused, more tourist focused. So
it does seem to be a lot of international people this summer.
Yeah.
I guess with the exchange rates.
Yeah.
You're starting to see
in their favour.
And the sort of, even when the staycations were on and people were staying in Ireland, it was really interesting to see Irish tourists coming to places, you know, like Donegal, where they hadn't really explored before. And the spend that those guys were putting in, the spend per head was actually higher than the international tourists, which is kind of interesting in itself, yeah.
Okay.
So hopefully, having got a taste for Donegal, they'll come back.
Yeah, I know a couple of friends back in Dublin have said now they'll do a home and away. So one year they'll stay home somewhere on the island.
And
the next year they'll either go to the continent or wherever away happens to be. So I suppose one of those small silver linings that has come out of the pandemic is people having a greater appreciation of what we actually have on the island. So
for sure
I want to thank you for your time.
Pleasure. No,
we've talked beforehand, you've shown me around, I've got some photographs, so I'll share those when we push this out, but certainly I'll be back to Donegal. I've really enjoyed it, and I love what you guys are doing, and I appreciate you taking some time out of your day to sit down, talk, share what the future holds. And look forward to seeing some more great things coming out of Donegal.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's just the beginning. So,
So we should do another sláinte.
A little toast.
And we will.
Good luck. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Jens. Appreciate that.
Thanks for taking the time to listen to this episode. You'll find more episodes wherever you get your podcasts, and you'll find the My Favourite Irish video series at irishwhiskeylad.com. That's Irish whiskey with an E, LAD.com. If you've enjoyed this episode, I'd appreciate it if you could take a couple of minutes to leave a review or a rating at your favourite podcast platform. Until next time, sláinte wá.